Good morning. Thank you so much for listening to this, wherever you are, whenever you're listening to it. We've started a new series on Daniel, which I hope you guys are going to enjoy. I've certainly enjoyed reading the book again. It's one of my favourite books, certainly in the Old Testament. And as I think I've mentioned, I'm named after Daniel 7, so especially looking forward to that chapter. The reason why I've picked it is because Daniel's story, his experience, his life is mostly about living as a stranger in a strange land. He finds himself in a place he doesn't want to be. It's not where he expected to be, and it's very odd, and he's having to experience that and trying to live in a way that honours God in a place that's quite difficult to do so. And I've certainly resonated with a lot of the book as I've been reading it. I'd encourage you, if you get a chance, to have a read of it in its entirety, do so. I certainly resonate with the character of Daniel. I think he's amazing, one of my biblical heroes. Just really excited about looking at the series together. I'm recording this from church, which is quite a nice experience. The first time I've been in a little while, unsurprisingly. Wanted to come and check the building was still standing and pick up a few books and stuff. So I'm recording this from church itself. So I hope that as you're listening to this, you feel connected. You feel connected not just to the congregation at Earlscombe Baptist, but we together feel connected to the worldwide church that are doing some amazing things in quite tricky situations at the moment. Let's read together then from Daniel chapter 2. In the second year of his reign, Nebuchadnezzar had dreams. His mind was troubled and he could not sleep. So the king summoned the magicians, enchanters, sorcerers and astrologers to tell him what he had dreamed. They came and stood before the king and he said, "I've had a dream that troubles me and I want to know what it means." Which is the kind of fairly standard thing that I can imagine a king of the time would have been asking his magicians, enchanters and sorcerers. Then the astrologer said, "May the king live forever," which I imagine was a fairly standard greeting as well. "Tell your servants the dream and we'll interpret it." The king replies, "This is what I firmly decided. If you don't tell me what my dream was and interpret it, I will have you cut into pieces and your houses burned into piles of rubble." And yet again, we get a little insight into what King Nebuchadnezzar was like. "But if you tell me the dream and explain it, you'll receive from me gifts and rewards and great honour. So tell me the dream and interpret it for me." And the interpreters and astronomers at this point are feeling a little bit nervous. And I imagine thinking, "That's not how this thing works, King. You tell us the..." And so they once more replied, "Let the king tell us the dream and then we'll interpret it. That's kind of how this whole interpretation of dream thing is meant to work." And the king said, "I'm certain you're trying to gain time, because you've realised that this is what I have firmly decided. If you don't tell me the dream, there is only one penalty for you. You've conspired to tell me misleading and wicked things, hoping the situation will change. So tell me the dream, and I will know that you can interpret it for me." The astrologers answered the king, "There is no one on earth who can do what the king asks. No king, however great and mighty, has ever asked such a thing of any magician or enchanter or astrologer. What the king asks is too difficult. No one can reveal it to the king except the gods, and they do not live among men." Wow. No one can interpret this except the gods, and they do not live among men. One of the things that we start to do when we live as a stranger in a strange land is ask, does God care? Does God really dwell among men or care about what men are up to? Maybe he just set it up like a divine watchmaker and dialed it up and let the universe fly and has checked out. Maybe there are no gods. Maybe we're just here alone spinning on this little blue dot here out of chance and with no greater meaning. And as we live in strange times, as strangers in a strange land, as we live in places that make us feel uncomfortable, or like the enchanters and astrologers, when we encounter difficulty and trial and stress, then we start saying, "Well, God doesn't care. God doesn't live among men. God doesn't want anything to do with us. The gods do not dwell among humans." One of my favourite clips in The Simpsons is there's a great tragedy about to befall Springfield, and the whole town see this tragedy coming. I think it's in the movie, actually. They see this tragedy coming, and everyone runs out onto the street. And then everyone who was in the pub runs into the church. And everyone who was in the church runs into the pub. Such a cool image. I really like it. And I've read some incredible stats about the number of people who are attending virtual churches at the moment. Huge numbers. I think 1 in 4 is what I read somewhere, especially among younger adults. There's this reawakening, I think, and people, like the people who were in the pub, they see this the stressful things happening and they run to the church. I'm also aware that there is a move the other way sometimes, that people who have been in church, people who are Christians, then when the stress comes, we almost think, well, this wasn't part of the deal, God. I'm going to the pub. Do you really care, Mum? Throw our arms up. The astrologer answered the king, what the king asked is too difficult. Do we ever say that to God? What you've asked is too difficult. No one can reveal it to the king except the gods, and they don't live among humans. I think for the magicians and astrologers and stuff, then, what's at stake here, as well as their lives, obviously, because Nebuchadnezzar is an absolute nutcase, but they've reached the end of what they're able to do. Because I imagine they've built a fairly successful to this point career on hearing what the king has to say and then interpreting the dream in a way that will make the king happy. And they've risen to the top of the Babylonian enchanter world to be advisors to the king. But they're now presented with something that they cannot do in their own strength. They have reached the end of themselves. They are incapable of meeting this challenge. Now, we're used to doing stuff for ourselves. I mean, even us as a nation, we've lived through an incredible period of security and peace and freedom for the last 70, 75 years. And when we encounter challenges and stresses, when we have our freedom curtailed, it hurts. And suddenly we can't do the things we used to be able to do. And we get frustrated. And we get stressed and we get angry. And we think, I want to do this myself. Let me make the decision. It's an assault to our pride when we realise that we have reached the end of ourselves. But the truth is, all of us at some point will reach the end of ourselves. For the astrologers and magicians, it took a king to ask them something impossible. For us, it might just be one day we wake up and think, I cannot do this anymore. There's a point, I feel, where all of us, we come to the deep questions of what's going on in the world, and we look into our own lives, and so often we see stuff that we don't want to be there, and it dawns on us that no self-help's going to cut it. That the problems in the world are the same problems that are in our heart, and we're here already. We reach the end of our tether, we reach the limit of what we're capable of doing, and like the wise men, we throw up our hands in desperation and say, this is too hard. The gods must not dwell among men. God's left us to our own devices and we can't cut it ourselves. Ever thought that? Do you feel that now? I just can't go on. But fortunately, the chapter doesn't end there. Because Daniel knows that at the end of himself, he finds a God who is just getting started. Grace is experienced for us as we reach the edge of what we're capable of doing, the limits of our own ability. When we throw our hands up and say, we can't do this anymore, we find a God with his arms outstretched saying, you weren't meant to do it by yourself. I never asked you to carry that weight. A God, the prodigal God, who runs towards the prodigal son and throws his arms around him and says, stop trying to do it yourself. Come home. Let me feed you. Let me put a ring on your finger. Let me put a cloak on your back. And let me throw a party because the son who I thought was dead is alive. Oswald Chambers wrote, in our abandonment, we give ourselves over to God. When we reach the end of ourselves, we throw our arms up and we say, God, if you're there, take us. We've got nothing else to offer. And it's at that moment we find grace begins. We find God with his arms outstretched. Oswald Chambers says, in our abandonment, we give ourselves to God, just as God gave himself for us. Because as we throw our hands up and say we can't do it anymore, we encounter a Jesus with his arms outstretched saying, I've done it all already. James Smith writes that Platonism, the Greek mindset, offers a ladder to reconnect with God, to reconnect God and humanity. But in Christianity, God climbs down. As we reach the end of our ladder, of our tether of our abilities, we encounter a God on his way down to us. Again, as James Smith writes, as the God who swings low to carry us home. Daniel can interpret the dream. And he doesn't interpret the dream just because he's smarter than everyone else. He interprets the dream because he asks the living God what he needs to do. He doesn't do it because he's smarter than the astrologers. It's not because his brain works better. It's because he knows where to put his faith and he knows it's not within himself. Daniel hasn't surrendered himself to the situation. He has surrendered himself to God. He's not given up. He's not saying, oh, hell with this. I can't do it anymore. No, he's allowed himself to say, I can't do this anymore, but how can I be used for the purposes of God? He has reached the end of himself and found that that is the point that God is just getting started. Like the alcoholic who turns up to the first AA meeting, we reach a point where we think we can't do it ourselves. We're going to need others. We're going to need God. Daniel, having been summoned by the king, comes before him and incredibly not only interprets the dream, which would be quite cool, and we're going to look a little bit about this in a few weeks, but he tells the king what the dream is first and then interprets it, which is just incredible. And he does it because God gives him this insight. So Daniel interprets the dream, amazing. The astrologers are a bit jealous. Daniel's the hero of the day. And Daniel replies, no wise men, enchanter, magician or diviner can explain to the king the mystery he is asked about. But there is a God in heaven who reveals mysteries. There is a God in heaven who reveals mysteries. He's shown King Nebuchadnezzar what will happen in days to come. Your dream and the visions that pass through your mind as you were lying in bed are these. And then he goes on to explain the dream. There is a God in heaven who reveals mysteries. There is a God in heaven who cares. And for those of us who sometimes wake up some days and think, I cannot do this anymore. The gods mustn't dwell among men. Look at this passage. You're not asked to do it yourself. You're not asked to carry that burden yourself. We encounter a Jesus with his arms outstretched saying, I've done it all already. And with Daniel, we can say, we can't do it. No enchanter, no wise man, no diviner can do this. But there is a God in heaven who reveals mysteries. There is a God who can. Not only is there a God who can, not only is there a God who reveals mysteries. That line earlier, the gods do not dwell among men. It's a lie. We have a God who cares about how many hairs are on your head. For me, that is a depressingly fast decreasing number. We have a God who knows when one sparrow falls. We have a God who cares about you. We have a God who knows exactly what it is like to dwell among men. Exactly what it is like to wear flesh and struggle and face trial and tribulation and difficulty and stress. Our God knows what it's like. There is a God in heaven who reveals mystery. There is a God in heaven who cares. And there is a God in heaven who knows what it is like to dwell among men. We don't worship some distant, uncaring being who set the universe up and then left to go for lunch. We worship a God who is passionately involved in his creation. The God with his arms outstretched. The Jesus with his arms outstretched. It's okay to reach the end of yourself. To say, I can't do it anymore. Throw yourself into the open arms of a loving Father who reveals mysteries, who cares about you, who knows what it's like to dwell among men. Let's pray. Father, for those of us who are feeling stressed, I pray for your peace. For those of us who feel that we are faced with challenges we cannot overcome. I pray for your hope. I thank you that you care. I thank you that you walk with us. I thank you that you know what it is like to live as a human, that you have descended in order that we might ascend. Father, this morning, we want to surrender ourselves to you and say your will, your kingdom, your glory. Amen.